From WXXI and the Eastman School of Music, welcome to Backstage Pass, live from Kodak Hall at Eastman Theater. I'm Julia Figueres. We are thrilled to return to this beautiful space for the 2019 Gateways Music Festival, which celebrates classical musicians of African descent. Backstage Pass is made possible in part by a gift from Drs. Dawn and Jack Lipson to support performance, innovation, and accessibility of the arts in the Rochester community. We have lots of great performances ahead, but now, without further ado, please welcome Music Director Michael Morgan and the Gateways Music Festival Orchestra.
Thank you.
That was Juba, the third movement from Symphony No. 3 by Florence Price, with the Gateways Festival Orchestra and music director Michael Morgan. This is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres, and we are live at the Gateways Music Festival. My first guest today hails from Arizona, where he's the principal clarinet with the Phoenix Symphony. Please welcome Alexander Lang. So, Alex, you were just awarded the Sphinx Medal of Excellence. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So what does that mean to you?
It means a tremendous amount. I mean, it's a great recognition from the field and from Sphinx specifically. And it's really, it's a huge boost to the projects that I'm undertaking and a way to sort of advance the work that I'm doing. So I'm extremely grateful, and also puts me in tremendous company, some of which is here on the stage, that I'm just sort of awed to have been grouped with. So it's really just a huge inflection point in my career.
You have made it a big mission in your life to work with kids.
Yes.
So how do you convince kids that classical music, which is really often very foreign to their ears, is really their music too?
Yeah, well, I'll say I don't carry that water. So I don't try to convince kids that so-called classical music is the musical form for them. And so the after-school project that I started, The Leading Tone, is agnostic as to musical styles. So we work with a lot of different artists, and right now we're actually sort of moving out of our infancy into our toddlerhood and really focusing on professional development and how we can give artists the tools and resources and training they need to become really great teaching artists. So this past year, our cast of artists, teaching artists, included a hip-hop MC. We worked with a theater arts person, so someone who did more sort of spoken word and acting and helped the kids develop stories and act those out. So for me, that's the best way to sort of create a space for so-called classical music, actually, is to not make it the only option.
So how'd you end up with the clarinet?
Yeah, so I ended up with the clarinet. I was really fortunate that I had supportive parents, which I think everyone on stage would say is a big part of how this happens. Ironically, my mom's mom, so my grandmother, was a big fan of Benny Goodman and had wanted one of her kids to play the clarinet, and none of them did. And so when I showed a musical ability on the recorder, because that was available in my school, my school didn't have an instrumental music program, so I started with a program run by the DC Youth Orchestra one summer in a group clarinet lessons.
You are on the artistic and strategic planning committees for the Gateways. So what artistically has changed over the years, and where do you now want to see some growth?
Well, I mean, I think what artistically has changed, in a sense, is not much, right? It's always been a steady trajectory upwards and towards better and better things. That's sort of the nature of so-called classical music, right? Always pursuing something better, always pursuing a higher standard of excellence. And Gateways is no different in that way. The action words in Gateways' mission statement are connecting and supporting the musicians, and enlightening and inspiring communities. And so we're focusing especially on that second half, enlightening and inspiring, and how can we create offerings that serve the greatest number of people.
Thank you for bringing your inspiration
Absolutely.
To us, Alex Lang. Ladies and gentlemen, clarinetist Alex Lang, and we are now going to return to the music of Florence Price with the first movement of her piano quintet in A minor. The violinists are Josh Henderson and Robert Fisher. Carolyn Jones, the violist. The cellist is Derek Memchan. And William Chapman Niaho is the pianist. This is Backstage Pass. We're live from the Gateways Music Festival on Classical 91.5. Thank you. First movement of Flora's Price's Piano Quintet in A Minor with violinists Josh Henderson and Robert Fisher. Carolyn Jones was the violist, the cellist Derek mentioned, and at the keyboard, William Chapman Niaho. Bassoonist Monica Ellis is next. She is a longtime member of the Imani Winds, who were on Backstage Pass 7.5 years ago. Great to see you again.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
The Imani Winds just celebrated 22 years. How'd that happen?
I agree. I have no idea. Yes, 1997 we started, so similar time frame with Gateways, and we've been having an awesome time since then.
And actually, the Imani Winds and Gateways have very similar missions, don't they?
I would say, yes. As a primarily African-American wind quintet, we have strived to do just that, the similar mission that Gateways does have, which is inspire and share the fantastic diversity and that exists in classical music. We've done that through our commissions. We've done that through our collaborations, just showing that there's so much out there that can be representative of the world and nation that we live in.
Is the philosophy important inside of all chamber groups, and particularly the Imani Winds?
It surely is important for us, no doubt about it. I think nowadays, especially, there should be an ability to be relevant and to understand your place in, I think, classical music. And frankly, I don't think it's enough to just say you want to play pretty music and you want to just be out here for the sake of the music. That, of course, is highly important, and we are taskmasters when it comes to striving for perfection, musically speaking. But what you say behind that music is important. What you are trying to achieve, what type of role models are you going to be? What are you showing the public in order to have them learn and be more open and receptive to, again, the diverse cultures that music can provide? It's a service, I think, that we are giving our world, and we have to be cognizant of that, particularly as musicians of color. Representation is very important.
You went to school at Oberlin.
Yes.
And George Sacchini was your teacher.
He was.
He's here now at the Eastman School of Music. Have you said hello to him?
I have, yes. I was actually here in April to do some master classes, and so we caught up a whole lot then. And yes, we have been in touch since I've been back now. It is kind of weird to see him on the campus here, knowing him, having associated him with Oberlin so much. But he is my dear teacher, so wherever he is, I'll support.
You are one of the original members of the Imani Winds. How do you, as an ensemble, keep it together when you're busy with all of your other projects as well?
Well, Imani Winds, for sure, is our primary, not only source of income, but primary group when it comes to, it's our priority when it comes to the musical output that we are giving to our audiences. And so, you know, it's, we try to keep a tight schedule with our rehearsals and our touring, and folks get teaching opportunities in the mix of all of that. But, you know, after 22 years, we still want to do this, and we still want to give the opportunity for the public to see us play this type of music. So I think at the end of the day, the priority is, it's not hard to keep.
And you still like each other?
We do. We do. We spend many, many hours in minivans, right, driving around the country. So, yeah, we have a really good time, and the camaraderie is palpable.
Do you feel a similar camaraderie when you come here to the Gateways Festival to play?
Absolutely. And I have to admit, this is my first time at Gateways. Yeah, I mean, it's
taken you so long.
I don't know. It's always been there in on my radar. It's just kind of been almost kind of a cushion, I think. You're like, oh yeah, Gateways is there, and it'll always be there. That feeling is what you have. And so for one reason or another, I've not been able to participate before, but no, the camaraderie, we were up till 3 o'clock in the morning last night, just hashing it out, just talking about what's next and how do we make this world a better place. And so that is incredible. And I think that type of fraternity, or that type of just real connection that you have as musicians of color, as African-American musicians, it's something that is incredibly special. And Gateways provides that space for us to just be our authentic selves and have a place to come together and talk about things that you may not be able to do in other environments. And so it's a fantastic, fantastic organization, and it's been my pleasure to be a part of it this year.
We're so happy that you are a part of it this year, Monica. Thank you very much for chatting with me.
Thank you.
It's great to see you again.
Likewise. Thank you.
Monica Ellis is the bassoonist for the Imani Winds, and you can get more information on the group at Imani Winds.com. From Florence Price to Samuel Coleridge Taylor, we'll hear two of his spirituals now. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child, and they will not lend me a child. Titus Underwood is the oboist, Maya Stone the bassoonist, and Artina McCain plays the piano. This is Backstage Pass. We are live from the Gateways Music Festival on Classical 91.5.
Thank you.
Samuel Coleridge's Settings of Two Spirituals. They will not lend me a child, and sometimes I feel like a motherless child, played by the oboist Titus Underwood, bassoonist Maya Stone, and pianist Artina McCain. We'll hear more from them after we meet our next guest. Robert Lee Watt really laid the groundwork for African Americans in the classical world, becoming the first African American horn player to land an orchestral job. He became the assistant first French horn for the Los Angeles Philharmonic and stayed with the orchestra for 37 years. Welcome, Mr. Watt.
Thank you.
At the opening reception, you were given the Trailblazer Award. Congratulations. And when you accepted that award, you said, when all was said and done, I just wanted to play.
Yes, I probably fell in love with the French horn before I knew what it was, listening to it on the Lone Ranger broadcast, even on the radio, if I may date myself, hearing the Lone Ranger theme.
But the road to playing for you was not easy, and it started with your father.
Yes, a trumpet player who believed that my lips were too thick to play the thin rimmed French horn mouthpiece. And he thought, of course, being my father, that I should take up the trumpet like he did. So.
But you did not. And I've been reading your book and enjoying it tremendously, The Black Horn. Along the way, you were very, very lucky. There were many people who did believe in you, and there were many people who looked out for you, and many people who did believe it that you could accomplish this.
Absolutely. There was an old woman in my town, and to this day I don't know who she was, but she told me to, she said, you do that horn, boy, because one day there's going to be an all-colored orchestra, and they're going to need you. And to this day I can't figure how she knew that Armenta Adams Humming's Doomisonomy would enter the scene and create this. And I'm thinking about this all of my time here, wondering how she knew.
How did you move past hurtful behavior? Where is it in your soul that gets you beyond that when people were hurtful to you?
Well, I think the music is beyond that. You have to look at the music, which is the bigger thing, the bigger viewpoint. And I think just probably the biggest thing is knowing the shoulders that I was standing on, that people like Florence Price and all the W.E.B. Du Bois, we have all these amazing shoulders to stand on, and you look to them. There was an incident where something happened and I was about to be violent, and I thought back to my ancestors, well, compared to them, this is nothing, and that checked me. So that's where you get the strength from.
I want to thank you very much, Bob, for coming out and sitting down and having a chat with us. We appreciate it very much. Robert Lee Watt's book is The Black Horn. It's a CD. I Play French Horn is on MSR Records. And again, thanks for your time. We're going back to music now with another spiritual arranged by Samuel Coleridge Taylor. This time around is My Lord Delivered Daniel. Again, Titus Underwood is the oboist, Maya Stone, the bassoonist, and Artina McCain, the pianist. This is Backstage Pass, and we are live from the Gateways Music Festival on Classical 91.5.
Thank you.
That was Samuel Coleridge Taylor's arrangement of My Lord Delivered Daniel. The oboist is Titus Underwood. We have Maria Stone playing the bassoon, and the pianist is Artina McCain. We're going to hear from the Gateways Festival Orchestra again in a bit, but first I'd like you to meet a true YouTube star. This is cellist Kermaine Booker. Welcome, Kermaine.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
You are known as That Cello Guy.
I am.
How'd you get that name?
A funny story. I actually didn't give myself that name. I started doing YouTube videos just because I was bored and I needed something to do, and so people started to notice the videos and see me around town. It's like, hey, you're that cello guy that does the videos and does all the cool screens and everything. It's like, if everyone's going to just call me that cello guy, I should call myself that cello guy. And so I changed my name to that, and it kind of stuck.
Is it legally changed? Is on your driver's license?
No, not legally. It's still Kermaine Booker, and that's still my legal name, but my artist name is That Cello Guy.
You are principal cello in the Nashville Philharmonic Orchestra and the Jackson Symphony Orchestra. That's a lot of orchestras.
Yes, definitely. It's a lot of work, too.
You're working hard. Do you remember when you got the call that you'd won the audition?
Yes, it was... Where was I? I think I was traveling with Black Violin at the time, and they called, and I was like, are you serious? Like, what? Like, me? Like, but I said, you know what? Let's do this thing, and I accepted the challenge to be their principal cellist.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
We're lucky to have you. Now, you are, as I said, a bona fide YouTube star with your pieces, your videos, where you... You play all the parts in one.
Yes, definitely.
What in the world made you decide to do that?
Well, I live in Nashville, and everyone's really busy in Nashville, so I didn't have anyone to play with. So I said, I might as well play with myself. And so, you know, who wants to do the Schubert cello quintet with all cellos? Like, that's me. And so I decided I was going to just record all the parts, and here they go.
You actually... being in Nashville, have recorded with people like Martina McBride and Carrie Underwood. The vibe in a country western recording studio must be very different than an orchestra.
Very, very different. It's very, I would say, a lot more relaxed than the orchestra scene. Everyone in the orchestra scene is always trying to like, one, two, and three, get all the notes right. And then in the recording world, we kind of get to do things over again. So it's not as much pressure.
You know, a few years back, Kermaine, you taped a version of Barber's Adagio for strings, and you said it was in response to violence. And I watched it the other day and thought, it's still relevant.
Definitely. I remember that day like it was yesterday. It was a response to Dallas shootings and Philando Castile, and I was at work, and I remember feeling so heavy that I literally had to take off work for the rest of the day. And I said, I don't know what to do like with all these feelings, so all I just did was play. And it's funny because that video almost did not make it up. Like, I uploaded it, and my computer was like, no, it's not happening. And I just said, send, and I went to bed. And next thing I know, in the next morning, there's millions of views from millions of followers. And so I'm just like, wow, it's wonderful to see the response to that video and see how people see my heart in that video.
You got your cello in an interesting way. I've never heard of this before. How did you get your cello, Kermaine?
Oh, wow. So I was in college, and I've never owned a cello until now. And I was playing in a church for a few years, and the sister of the pastor was rather wealthy. And they found out that I was going to go to grad school without a cello because my school was taking their cello back. And so the first thing she said was, I'll buy you one. Mm-hmm. And showed up to our church the next day with a check for $50,000.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. That's a beautiful thing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Kermaine, when this is all over, what are you going to take back with you after the Gateways Music Festival is over? What will you take back with you when you get back to Nashville? What will you hold?
Honestly, to tell the truth, every time I come to Gateways, I'm always energized and inspired by just like the collection of musicians on the stage, and it gives me more hope that I can continue doing what I'm doing and continue to inspire other musicians to do what we're doing.
Gramaine Booker, thank you very much for spending time with us, and I hope you wrote that woman a thank you note.
Of course I did. You know, several.
You can find Gramaine Booker at thatcelloguy.com, and you can find him on YouTube. Thanks for sitting down with me, Gramaine. Maestro Michael Morgan is taking his place up on the podium now, and we are going to sit back and listen to the Gateways Festival Orchestra as they perform the anthem Lift Every Voice and Sing. This is Backstage Pass, live from the Gateways Music Festival on Classical 91.5. the Gateways Festival Orchestra with music director Michael Morgan and the anthem Lift Every Voice and Sing. Yes. I'm Julia Figueres, and joining me now are violist Jennifer Arnold and the Gateways president and artistic director Lee Kuntz. Jennifer's making her way over here, so could we have one more round of applause for this fabulous orchestra? So we're going to start with you, actually. You were a member of the Oregon Symphony Orchestra for some 14 years. Now you're making a bit of a job shift, a career shift. What are you doing these days?
So, after 14 years in the Oregon Symphony, I'm going to the office side of an orchestra. So I'll be the director of artistic operations, artistic planning and orchestral operations for the Richmond Symphony.
And are you going to miss your stage time?
Yes and no. I mean, I took a sabbatical 2 years ago from the Oregon Symphony to pursue arts administration, and I enjoyed going to concerts. It was really nice sitting on the other side for a little bit, you know. It's always nice to play on stage, especially with lovely colleagues like this, but yeah.
You have long advocated for diversity in classical music. How do you go about making that case and getting it to happen, Jen?
I'm not going to lie, I don't really make the case anymore. I kind of just program what I want to program. For a long time, it was just about making people aware that the music should be diverse. Classical music, especially for orchestras, was mainly classical for a long time, I would say after the 50s. And then slowly pop started coming in, and then slowly movies started coming in, and now it's just every kind of music, and black music, whether it's black classical, black hip, whatever, urban music or anything, it just needs to be included in the conversation.
So you're stepping up to a new role with the new chair of the Gateways Public Programs Committee. So what are you looking to accomplish in this new role, Jane?
Oh, how long do we have?
you have about 30 seconds.
30
Go.
Seconds. I'd like to see, one thing that we did do this year is we added more works by black composers, so that was really important to me. I'd like to see it grow. We had to turn away candidates, so I would like to see that change. And I think creating some more opportunities for youth, maybe a collegiate orchestra, a youth orchestra. I could go on for a long time, but yeah, growing, I should say.
Lee, so how do you coordinate all of these ideas as they come to you?
Well, this committee, the Artistic Programs Committee, is extraordinary. And a lot of things that have happened in this festival have come out of that committee. So the film series, certainly, has been a part of that committee's suggestions, and the piano recitals and all of the things that we're doing to kind of contextualize the festival have come out of the Artistic Programs Committee.
And how has your relationship with the Eastman School of Music transformed this festival?
Gee, Gateways has been involved with Eastman, and Eastman's been involved with Gateways since the festival came here in 1995. But we were separate in a way, kind of running on independent tracks, and now we're on the same track toward the same goal. And I think that Eastman's support and the University of Rochester's support over the last 3 years has really transformed Gateways. Our former board chair, Paul Burgett, Joel Seligman, Dean Rossi, really helped put the undergirding under Gateways in order for us to be where we are today.
So with just a brief moment left, as you're looking at this year's festival, Lee, what changes do you want to bring to the next festival?
Well, I mean, we certainly would like to become an annual festival. And I think that's a really big, big deal for us. And it's really all about the resources to be able to do that. But we need to also, as Jennifer mentioned, try to find ways to bring more musicians. We turned away about 200 musicians this year. And so how do we find ways to bring them to Gateways as well?
I want to thank both of you, violist Jennifer Arnold and Gateways president and artistic director Lee Kuntz. Congratulations to both of you and to all who are involved in the Gateways Music Festival. I'm Julia Figueres, and I want to thank you for joining us in this special broadcast of Backstage Pass, live from Kodak Hall at Eastman Theater. It has been our privilege to be part of the Gateways Music Festival, celebrating the talents of classical musicians of African descent. Backstage Pass is made possible in part by a gift from Drs. Dawn and Jack Lipson to support performance, innovation, and accessibility of the arts in the Rochester community. Our audio producers, John Truker, with house audio by Jules Corchamilia. Brian Signorelli is the house steward. Ron Stackman is the director of stage operations at the Eastman School of Music. His amazing crew includes Zach Freeman and David Zakaria. We had assistance from WXXI classical program director Ruth Finney. Special thanks, of course, to the Eastman School of Music, to Lee Kuntz, to the president and artistic director of the Gateways Festival, and to music director Michael Morgan for helping make this broadcast possible on Classical 91.5. And especially thanks to the musicians of the Gateways Festival for sharing their gifts with us. Gene Fisher is our executive producer of Backstage Pass, and I'm your host, Julia Figueres. Backstage Pass is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.